what makes me sound like the villain in a third-rate television melodrama, I do have the extreme honor of telling you your usefulness to Operation Kronos and the totality concept has ceased.
So, the day has come. I have never feared death.
So you say. So you've said. I've got some video interviews with you saying just that very phrase, same ramrod posture, same twitch in your jaw. You know, I spent a sleepless night debating my next move, imagining the joy I'd take from watching your death throes, from a purely scientific view, of course. Then I decided death was too good for you, Tanner. Much too good.
Make your boasts or do as you will, Wells. Or get out.
Doc turned his attention away and opened his book to the page he'd been reading before. The words of the paragraph were meaningless now, and he read the same sentence over and over without retaining any of the content. His eyes were on the page, but his ears and his mind were on Wells. The administrator hadn't paid any heed to his patient's request to leave. He was just getting wound up.
You weren't a team player. Oh, no, 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 not the mighty Dr. Tanner, owner of 2 doctoral degrees. No. Most men would bow to their betters, acknowledge their masters, and beg for whatever crumbs of glory they might be content to pass along. No, not you, bleating about your sainted wife and ratty children. We gave you an out, would have allowed you to return, and you spit in our faces, all smug in your limited command of backward faith and knowledge of right and wrong.
You made your proposition for your masters, Wells.
Doc softly turned in the cot and placed his feet on the cell floor, then rested his hands on his knees.
As their faithful lapdog, I know you were disappointed when I refused your most generous offer. A man of character would have known then I was not to be blackmailed or bought, and as such should have been returned to my proper place in time. For time, you see, has checks and balances, and by plucking me away from my particular slot, you have upset the apple cart. My wife has endured a life without a husband, and my children have endured a life without a father.
Your children? Life without daddy?
That is correct.
Your children are dead, you pathetic fool.
Dead now, of course, unless they were incredibly long-lived. And while the Tanners are a hearty bunch, I harbor no illusions of a 110-year-old Jolyon being wheeled through the door to say hello to his father.
No, no, not dead now, dead then. They died within seconds after you were trawled. While you were in flux, held within the temporal containment field, random fluctuations of wild energy escaped Tanner, escaped crackling and gibbering and killing. Any living tissue it came in contact with resulted in violent cellular disruption.
You, sir, are a liar.
And you, sir, are a trusting, mewling fool. We didn't lie to you. We told you your children were long dead, and the Tanner bloodline had stopped with their demises. All true. What we neglected to inform you of was some of the details.
Then Doc was on him, his hands around Wells' portly throat. In his brain, which was colored now with a killing haze of red, Doc saw his oppressor's head pop off his neck like a cork from a bottle of champagne, and a geyser of blood spurt into the air. Such a scene remained imaginary, however, locked inside Doc's mind, for 1 second after his lunge for Wells, his cell door slid back a second time, and a knot of grim-faced security men came rushing into the room, peeling the whippling man off his much heavier foe.
You lie! You are playing mind games, punishing me for my non-compliance. I will not have it! Send me back!
Too late! Too late!
I accept your damnable agreement. Return me to my family.
Too late for deals. Too late. We no longer need you, Tanner. You have outlived your usefulness by, oh, say 100 years.
Duck struggled as he was carried out into the hallway.
I could help you. I could be of assistance.
Oh, could you? Well, that was our intention. But now we're not so sure it would be the correct action to take. Why, such an act might create a paradox, but then again it might not, and right now, my good man, I don't care. So buck up and allow me to give you my Christmas present.
Wells had chosen 4 of the burliest men he could find to accompany him to Doc Tanner's holding cell. His estimate was still off by 2, since it ended up taking 6 of the security men to effectively pry their charge out of the room and into the waiting elevator. Wells had debated the advice of sedating Tanner, but finally decided it would serve his purposes to have his test subject awake for the process. And for what his purposes might be, Wells wasn't sure of that either. He did know he wanted Tanner to suffer, and a Kron temp jump into the future seemed to be the perfect way of assuring the man's agony. Wells took the entire Doc Tanner affair quite personally. He'd been on the committee to select Tanner, drawn up the plan to trawl him forward, push him back, overseen the man's acclimation into Operation Kronos, and now, after the ungrateful bastard had rejected their offer, and on top of rejection had tried repeatedly to escape, Herman Wells was going to take immense pleasure in showing the skinny shit the door. In other words, he had no desire to see his most famous failure make his last journey unconscious. And then, they were out of the elevator and moving at a fast jog down the corridor, Doc caterwauling the entire way. After entering the triple numerals into the entry keypad, Wells led the way into the massive cron jump chamber control room itself and past the consoles, past the monitors, past the banks of flashing lights, past the eyes of the watchers, all of them dressed in white lab coats. A few personnel turned away, distaste on their bespectacled faces, but most watched the scene play out before their eyes with a mix of concern and horror. Except for a figure lurking at the edges of the outer control room, the doc didn't immediately recognize. A lean man, tall, yet solid and imposing, and with the same easy assurance and carriage as had been Doc's in better days. Long silver hair was combed back from his forehead, giving his narrow face a severe look. His eyes were unreadable, hidden by the shadows, and by a pair of imposing silver eyebrows. The man appeared to be glacier cool as he stood apart from the others, alike in form, only through the long white lab coat he wore. A raspberry purple necktie was tied at his neck in a proper Windsor knot. All of them save this new figure knew Doc personally. Some had engaged him in debate, seeking the viewpoint of a living anachronism in their midst, and none took pleasure in seeing him screaming at the top of his lungs while being brutally manhandled. The only person enjoying the spectacle was Wells. In a display that would later bring him reprimands, the fat man was enjoying himself far too much. Even while serving as point man of the hour, he was eagerly awaiting the chance later to review his performance on the security tape being made on the redoubt's elaborate security system. The group was now within the anteroom that separated the Mat-Trans chamber from the central control area. The room was small, only 10 feet by 20, keeping the guards pressed close to the wiggling dock. Wells stayed at the back, wishing he was taller in order to truly oversee the scene as it unfolded. The unadorned white bodysuit that had been assigned as his regular attire after the second escape attempt was ripped from Doc's struggling form, leaving him naked as a newborn. The fingernails of one of the security guards raked his arm, drawing blood as the suit was torn away. Doc felt his genitals shrivel up, trying to stay as close to his body as possible. Being nude just made the fate he was to suffer even more humiliating. After the removal of his suit, he was lifted high by the six security men and thrown bodily into the matter transfer room, where he came crashing down painfully on his left shoulder. Doc landed on one of the steel floor discs, but also felt a jab of some object poking into his body. As he rolled over to his side, he found beneath his aching form two round spheroids, test objects used in previous jump experiments. Doc reached across the disc and picked up the perfect metal balls from the tiled floor. Wells called out to him from the open armaglass chamber door.
Didn't want to send you off without what you came in with.
He threw in a double armload of clothing, a black frock coat, a pair of tan breeches, two thigh-high black boots, and other pieces of the apparel Doc had been wearing when trawled 2 years earlier. Apparently the clothing had been kept in storage after being studied by researchers of the project. The bundle hit the floor and scattered lifelessly next to the aching Doc, who spied a button on the sleeve of the shirt he remembered Emily had sewed on a lifetime ago. The air began to thicken, and his brain began to shut down.
No!
Struggling to his feet, the skinny man staggered to the chamber door like a drunken mantis and used the metal sphere he held in his right hand to begin pounding on the unbreakable surface of the armaglass. Again and again, he raised his arm and brought it smashing down. The silver-haired man with the raspberry-purple necktie calmly observed him from control, watching Doc on a wall monitor, the picture beamed from an interior security camera hidden inside the armaglass chamber.
Wasting his strength on such a futile show. He should sit down and compose himself, or he'll never survive the trawl.
I don't think Dr. Wells wants him to survive, Mr. Burr.
Chan's own prior conflict with Doc was now put aside, as he too stood back and watched what was about to occur. Burr shot Chan a withering glare, and the technician fell silent, choosing to no longer peer at the live video monitor. Instead, he sat and focused on the readings coming.